Totally not kidding about going out to McDonald's in a storm to get a Diet Coke.
Don't you have Diet Cokes where you live?
Not in the house, no. And this is an effort to get me to actually cut back on drinking Diet Coke. And so I basically, like,
To go out into the world and get Diet Coke.
Yeah, the rule is I have to go out and get it.
But why specifically McDonald's Diet Coke?
I don't know. They
just
must put something
in it.
McDonald's? No, it's really good Diet Coke. It's like the best fountain Diet Coke. Holy I can't son. Explain it, but I'm telling you, you can talk to other people who have all a Diet Coke problem, and we will all say. I've had my 8 glasses of water for the day. I deserve it. So.
Well, the first time people I'm supposed to talk to are described as having a problem. I'm not.
Well, because it's kind of embarrassing that you have this very specific carbonated beverage preference. It really is. Mm. So there is that.
This is more of a Diet Coke enthusiast, please.
Yes, well, connoisseur.
I can't point fingers because I found I really prefer Coke in bottles over Coke in cans to the point where, although I have free cans of Coke at work, I still buy a bottle and bring it.
Mm. Wow.
Whereas I don't like Diet Coke in the plastic bottles at all. It has to be fountain.
Sure. So. Mm-hmm. Huh. There's a different texture.
Monty, you should get like a funnel. Is it the taste or is it just drinking out of a bottle? Because you could get like a funnel and take a can and put it in a plastic bottle.
My perception is that the bubbles are a little larger in the plastic bottle. There's a different mouthfeel that I much prefer.
Lisa, I think it has something to do with the ice.
It could be.
Because they make those little square cubes that have those divots inside them.
Yeah.
There's something about the ice, I think.
There, from what I can remember of my undergraduate education, the reason you're supposed to actually pour your soda first and then put in the ice has to do with the way that the carbon the carbonation gas is dissolved into the fluid. And to make a long story short, like the more surface area there is, the faster it fizzes out.
Yes.
So I think your ice theory might be onto something because it kind of it monkeys with the surface area ratio in a way that other inferior places do not.
there's a waiter or waitress will break my heart if the restaurant like doesn't have fountain drinks, they have them in cans and they think they're doing me a service by like pouring it at the table. And I'm like, no, you hold the glass almost horizontally and just let it you're just like lifting it from like six inches above the rim of the glass. And it's going fluck, 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 fluck. Oh, all the carbonation is going away. And now I'm going to have this very flat beverage. And I can't really knock anything off of your tip because you probably didn't know. But I'm going to be very, very sad for a good 18 seconds after this now.
The most magical fountain drink invention to me is this new thing they have where they can just push a button and it puts out exactly the right amount for a large.
Yeah. Oh, they do that, yeah.
Oh, do you have those machines where it's a touch screen and they have basically
at the Burger Kings they do, yeah.
They have like ink cartridges of like syrup.
Yeah, the freestyle.
The great thing about that is that you can do like combos. And I always do like give me like 6 seconds of like full Dr. Pepper and the rest of it as Diet Dr. Pepper, just enough to give me just enough sugar for like an 8 ounce beverage, but now give me like 24 ounces full.
Give
of
me
cup.
Enough aspartame for an 8 month cancer. Yeah.
I always feel like I ought to be doing stuff like that where I'm making a drink that's 1/4 raspberry Dr. Pepper and then 2/3 peach Coke, but I just get regular Coke.
Yeah. Well, this worst. Has been Soda Talk.
Yes, that'll be the next
coming
podcast.
Coming up later, meat-related powers of superheroes.
It's the New Zoo Review.
It's the New Zoo Review coming right at you. I remember that, Monty.
That was a disturbing show.
Yeah, that was kind of that's our new topic as of now.
Welcome to the New Zoo Review Club.
That was kind of a crypto fundamentalist Christian child's TV show, as I recall. Kind of just like nobody tell anybody we're fundamentalist Christians, but we are. Not like Zoom; those people were anarchists. The children of Zoom with their brightly striped polo shirts.
The banana splits, all Tories.
This has gone off the rails faster than usual.
I feel so left out because I was one of those kids who was not allowed to watch TV.
I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I thought that one of the things that Marvel could effectively do to Sony was just casually introduce Miles Morales into the MCU. And then just see how things develop from there. Because Sony has Peter Parker and Spider-Man, but they don't have Miles Morales.
I don't know. I think maybe the way that works is that they've got all derivatives of Spider characters, including Miles Morales. I think
I don't think they have Spider-Woman, because that's going to be one of the Netflix shows.
Well, it's Alias.
Jessica Jones is going to be. And I wish I had Netflix just because I really enjoy the actress who's going to play Jessica Jones. And I enjoy her to the point where I can't remember her name because that's just how much I like her.
It just all gets hazy.
Yeah, you know, she was the B in Apartment 23.
Right.
Yeah, I really hope they bring James Vanderbeek on to Jessica Jones then.
Her? She was great.
Yeah, not the blonde, the lead one who is the B. Yes, her. She's awesome.
The one who was also on Breaking Bad.
That's it, Kristen Ritter. Yes,
yeah. She was awesome. She was great on that show.
She's going to make a great Jessica Jones, and I'm excited to make friends. I need to make friends with people who have Netflix so I can watch it.
Yes, and also David Tennant is going to be Kilgrave the Purple Man in that show. I just like to say Kilgrave the Purple Man. I said it again.
What a great 1970s character. I guess to answer the question, though, I think that I have two separate answers. I mean, the only one that counts is that Marvel, I hope, is going to write stories that attract and hold an audience. It's perfectly okay if this is a brand new audience. It's perfectly okay if this is if they switch full time to a type of storytelling and publishing that's just not aligned with my interests anymore. I mean, I've had like a quarter century run with Marvel. It's not a tragedy if suddenly I'm just not buying Marvel comics anymore. On the other hand, I just don't want them to be like, have you ever been to one of those cities that is only like 35 years old? And you can tell there's no history here. It's a little bit creepy. Even the library is brand new and all the houses are brand new and all the streets make perfect sense. And they're named after like presidents that were alive when you were alive, or president when you were alive. My favorite version of the Marvel Universe, and DC for that matter, is where like a city like Boston, where you will see a library that is built as a palace in 1893, and it's got this god but ugly like 1973 grotesque addition in concrete behind it, and there's a church that's 200 years old like two blocks away, and next to it is just a very, very bland but beautiful steel and glass edifice like the John Hancock Tower. That's such a rich experience, and I feel as though the Joe Quesada, who's I don't know what his title is his publisher or chief creative officer
I think of
Marvel, something like that. He keeps using the phrase where it's my job to kick over anthills, and that kind of disappoints me because it feels like, well, if you keep kicking over anthills, you just wind up with flat sand everywhere. And you really want that kind of differentiation. But I have to go back to the original thing that it's – I can't – there were a lot of people who were really steamed about Secret Wars. Every time that when John Byrne took over Fantastic Four, I'm sure there are a whole bunch of old fans of Fantastic Four that just thought it was terrible and had to stop reading the book. And it was because of those changes that I got to really have this wonderful – several decade run of liking Marvel. It's perfectly okay if it's no longer my time to be a Marvel fan.
I think that's fair. I can't believe the uniforms are the reverse of what they were.
I'm tracking something with a nervous eye because the last episode of the mid-season finale of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is where the Inhumans thing. This is totally not so we can reinvent mutants so that we can use them and make money off them. And so these two characters are coming out of pods, and one of them is a brand new character. The other one is
dinosaur.
We don't know exactly. But it's like, oh god, there's a rumor that it could be Tigra, and this is one of those characters that I've always liked because I've always thought there was so much potential as character. And I'm like, oh please make sure it's not Tigra, because if that happens, A, they're going to make a very, very like special effects minimal version of it, and they're gonna we need a bad person to be in this a baddie to be in this series. And so you know that, whereas like maybe 10 years ago, okay, well, hey, that's just the cartoon, or hey, that's just the movie, the version that I like is still okay in the comic books, it's gonna be no, there's gonna be some sort of event where suddenly the version of Tigra in the Marvel universe is the half dinosaur mostly human person who's actually a total jerk who's undermining everyone's abilities. Like, oh man.
Reed Richards can't be contained to just one solar system.
No, he can't. It's not fair. And Hickman's Avengers run has been like that. But again, I you know. I think I'm with you. You've got to have joy.
That's kind of definitive. Byrne was able to do that science fiction stuff with great economy and style. Yeah. Hickman is like, I have to keep loading concrete blocks onto this to make it bigger and bulkier and heavier.
It's brutalist modern storytelling. Exactly right.
I was gonna say that like Byrne designs the iPhone and Hickman has to design, you know, a trio. You have to slam it into 8 different sleds. But yours is much more elegant.
Oh my goodness. Oh wow.
See, it's still a phone, and look, the phone has a big bushy beard. That's how you can tell that he's a Hickman character. Oh God. So when Hank Pym came on board Yellow Jacket, of course now he has a big bushy beard because it's like if you work as a character for Marvel, you get your script, there's a box with a fake beard in it. Uh-huh. I'm being written by Hickman now, aren't I? Oh damn it. This thing's gonna itch like hell for 8 months until he kills me.
It's gonna be totally awkward when it's the all female Avengers.
Who's the person who sent, who's the writer who sent Captain America to Arnim Zola world for 20 years? Was that Hickman? That wasn't Hickman, was it? Because he got all beardy there, too.
I'm in an alternate dimension.
Well, what I love about...
For 10 years.
When you go back and forth through Marvel, what I like is how they show the passage of time. One of three things usually happens. One, there's a horrible disfiguring facial scar. Mm-hmm. To indicate that something terrible happened in the other world. Two, somebody gains or loses a tremendous amount of weight. Or three, there's a beard in play.
Even when he did that sort of lame, you know, thing with the Thing at the end of his Fantastic Four run, where mm-hmm. another the Thing lives like 3,000 years. Of course, he has like a rock beard. It's like, yes.
Oh my God,
Now you're just screwing with this, aren't you, John? It should be moss, yes.
Although, can you imagine how horrified you are? Because if you're the Thing, you have so few physical consolations in life. Because, again, you're a big pile of mobile rock. And you're like, well, at least I never have to shave. And then all of a sudden, you're growing like little pebble 5 o'clock shadow.
No, I got stalactites. Thank you very much.
He can get one of those big grinder things like Hellboy uses.
Yeah.
I can't endorse the Fantastic Four stuff from Hickman. I've enjoyed his Avengers.
I feel like I should like him.
Also, his Ultimates was really bad, too. But, you know.
Oh, I feel like I should like him a lot more than I do. I just finished Pax Romana, which is a graphic novel he wrote about time-traveling Jesuits who want to change world history. And it is one of the most physically ugly books I have ever looked at.
It is really ugly.
And it gets impenetrable, and all of the female characters betray people. So there's like some sort of ex-girlfriend thing he might be subconsciously working out. And it was just such a slog. And the thing is alternate history can be so much fun because that's where you do throw in whimsy, where you're like, alternate history. Oh, so it's now called the Straight Tower of Pisa. Or you're like, oh, well, turns out that Hannibal really doesn't like elephants or something like that. And it was none of that. No. Instead, it was like, we've brought nukes to Ireland. Now we rule the world. Jeez.
That's always puts you in a weird frame of mind, though, when there's a creator that is so popular. Mm-hmm. And everybody's saying this is one of the definitive Fantastic Four runs for the ages, and you totally respect that opinion. But then you go back, so maybe was there something I missed? Maybe it's because I was reading it month after month instead of being able to read it all at once. And so you go back and say, no, this is still a hot mess in which he doesn't seem to understand the characters, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. It goes back to the whole artist subjective thing, because
sometimes you feel the worst thing as a reader is to be totally unaware of your own prejudices. Yeah. Where I have to understand, for instance, that I just don't like Charles Grodin in movies. That there's a good chance I'm not going to like this movie simply because Charles Grodin is in it. I know that that's one of my blind spots, and so I'm just always on the alert. Hopefully, that if there's a book I didn't like, I want to try to understand why I didn't like it, because maybe it's just that you're just a stick in the mud on this one topic. Just like when I don't like these reboots, I don't like these maxi events. I can't criticize this without acknowledging that that's just not how I read comics. And there's people who do read comics that way that love it.
I am kind of living in dread of the moment where they introduce Harley Quinn on Gotham, because, you know, it'll be happening at some point where you see like a child skipping down the street in mismatched shoes and someone yells, come on, Harley. And you're, oh, there we go. It's going to happen. I mean,
Yeah. That's one third of that show is when the super villains, when they were children.
No, Phil and I had a discussion because they had, are you guys all caught up on that show?
As much as I'm going to be.
Yeah, me too. I've watched the first three and I'm never okay. watching it all again. Right. So,
no,
yeah.
Because there's some, I was going to ask, I need to talk to somebody about Edward Nygma and his strange stalking of the lady who works in the clerk office.
Well, I have a theory that he's going to turn out to be the Riddler.
Who has a totally obvious name and a well-established backstory? Is it?
And also started every scene with, I have a riddle for you. Mm-hmm. Just do your job, Nygma.
I like him. That's the problem, is I'm rooting for
if
him.
If a city has a large Romanian community, Nygma, there's like 40 of them in the phone book. Yeah. So yeah. It couldn't, not necessarily that guy.
Well, unfortunately, on Gotham, they've given the Penguin a backstory where he comes from some sort of indeterminate Eastern European community, and his his mother, yes. who's played by Carol Kane, is doing the full straight from the Schlettel accent. It's amazing. But I have to talk to God. We have to do an incomparable on Gotham just so it's either people saying for like an hour, nope, or it's me monologuing.
That superhero podcast when it happens.
I have to get back to Nathan Alderman about that too. Yeah. So
okay, Carol Kane is kind of like the anti-Charles Grodin for me. It's like, mm-hmm. I cannot not like a show that has Carol Kane in it.
I kind of want to see Bernadette Peters on Gotham, because if she and Carol Kane share a scene, my head will just explode with joy. That would be
good. She did Smash, so she'll do anything.
Exactly. Well, that picture she keeps, the rent on the attic where she's keeping the picture doesn't come cheap, obviously, because she's immortal. Oh, my God.
I think she's just suddenly realized that, I guess Sondheim is not going to be writing any more musicals. I need to pad out my schedule now.
She could have been in Into the Woods. What, she's too old to play a witch? Come on.
Well, the problem
she's
is
she's not a little Meryl Streep.
She's 66, but she looks so much younger. Oh my gosh. Unbelievable. She and Stevie Nicks can get together in their immortal divas tent or wherever it is these people hang out in their spare time. So
it is okay.
Yeah, it has to be. It's like a Knights of Arabian Nights type tent. It's all gauzy and there's incense in the corners. And
Stevie Nicks does not participate in anything that is not gauzy.
No.
That's just a fundamental of Stevie Nicks.
It's also the reason why she can't operate a drill press or a lathe, because of those long dangly sleeves.
That's right. You know it.
I'm just imagining Stevie Nicks entering woodshop and going, nope, and backing out again very slowly before her fringe catches on anything. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Mr. Terhansen, you're going to have to fail me for this course, because I'm not taking these sleeves off for anybody.
Meanwhile, Christine McVie is like right in there with a jigsaw. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we've gotten into the Fleetwood Mac comic books team up. I gotta go. Okay.